I will call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 9:06 a.m. on Wednesday, April 15th, 2025. And present today, we've got Representative Co-Chair Shragi, Representative Co-Chair Josephson, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Bynum, Representative Nelly, Representative Galvin, Representative Hannon, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And if folks can mute their cell phones. And we have one bill on the agenda today, and that is House Bill 246. That is the Special Education Service Agency funding bill by Representative Josephson. We'll be taking public testimony on the bill, reviewing the fiscal notes. We'll set an amendment deadline if it is the will of the committee. And so with that, I'd like to invite up Representative Josephson to the table, as well as his staff, Mr. Ken Alper. And if you could put yourselves on the record, just kind of remind us, give us a brief recap of what the bill is before we jump into public testimony and the fiscal note. So with that, welcome Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Andy Josephson, House District 13, South Midtown. With me is Ken Alper, who handles a lot of my legislation. As a reminder, the bill updates the AS 1430-650 by increasing the rate or the multiplier to be multiplied against the average daily membership for the Special Education Service Agency. Its primary role is to go to rural Alaska, principally, not exclusively, to work with low-incidence disability students, and also to build capacity. So it's also a teacher of teachers, if you will. And then secondarily, or at least in addition to that principal service, it has an autism program, deaf and hard of hearing program, et cetera. And so you asked about the fiscal note. The fiscal note is $469,900. That's entirely from the increase in that agency rate.
Great. Thank you very much. I also want to recognize that we have with us Representative Allard. And I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on House Bill 246. And if anyone would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. And I'll be repeating that after public testimony. And so is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, in terms of folks online, it looks like we have a few people online here. I'd like to first start with Jean Gerhardt Cyrus, and then after that will be, Richard Seville, and then after that, Karen Page. And then it looks like after that we have three more people. So those are the first three. And so Ms. Gerhardt Cyrus, looks like you're calling in maybe from New Mexico. If you can put yourself on the record, state your name and your affiliation, and go ahead and start with your public testimony. Ms. Gerhardt Cyrus, are you there? Okay, we'll come back to her. Next, we have Mr. Richard Seville calling in from Anchorage. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Good morning, members of the House Finance Committee. Thank you. My name is Richard Seville. I am the Education and Early Intervention Coordinator for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. One of the council's statutory duties is to serve as CESA's Board of Directors. And as such, council members make up the majority of the board. And through my position with the council, I hold an ex officio position on the board as well. It's currently extremely difficult for rural districts to hire special education teachers when they can, they are often spread over multiple schools in the district or are teaching via distance delivery. This leaves paraeducators and other general education teachers in the classrooms to teach children with highly complex disabilities. While these paras and teachers are no less dedicated, they have received less specific training and may lack tools and expertise of their special education counterparts. In short, they often have no idea how to properly meet the needs of these children. CESA provides a lifeline for these children and their teachers. While Alaska's ADM is in decline, the number of students served through CESA's Limited Incidence Disabilities Program has steadily increased over the last 15 years, due in no small part to the lack of available and in-person special education teachers. Having their funding tied to Alaska's declining ADM has created an untenable situation for CESA's LID program. Serving more children with fewer financial resources, coupled with unprecedented inflation, has created an environment where wait lists are now necessary. No child should need to wait to receive an appropriate public education. Increasing CESA's funding will allow them to hire additional specialists needed to serve the growing number of students, schools, teachers, and families who need their expertise. Without this funding, CESA will be forced to lay off specialists, creating longer wait lists and even greater wait times for students. Please support HB 246 to increase CESA's funding, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Seville. And with that, next we have Karen Page calling in from TOC. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Hello. My name is Karen Page. I'm sorry, I'm nervous. My name is Karen Page. I live in TOC, Alaska, within the Alaska Gateway School District. And I wanted to give my testimony as a parent of two highly disabled children. They require a lot accessing specialized services in rural Alaska is incredibly difficult. I am a mother of both of my children are nonverbal, low vision, and low muscle tone, and have complex medical needs. Due to the high turnover in our SPED department, CESA has always been a constant. They've been coming to us, helping our SPED department and school district area to improve their educational experience and accessibility within the school. Because of CESA, my children have received iPads with specialized grids for their low vision needs, with a special speech program. They've recommended high contrast materials, larger print. They've suggested classroom seating. They recommended bright floor markings for my children to be able to navigate in the classroom to specific areas. They helped me in our school district in recommending an adaptive playground equipment swing for my daughter to be able to swing with the other children. They've helped me apply for grants and apply through the blind for my children for these, because I have two children. It would be equally expensive to get these devices. And through the blind grant that I was able to get with their help has really saved me thousands. And they've helped. Without CESA, our special education program would not be able to meet the needs of my children, and I strongly urge you to increase the funding in HB 246 for our area and other rural areas. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Page. We've got a question or comment, Representative Galvin.
Well, thank you. Ms. Page, I just wanted to thank you so much for speaking up for not only your children, but others. You're painting the picture of what these services offer, from a first voice really does make a difference. So I wanted to thank you.
Thank you. And I'd also like to recognize that we have with us Representative Stapp. And so next up, we have Kelly McBride, and then Monica Goyette and Elizabeth Joseph. And so, Ms. Kelly McBride, if you could put yourself on the record, state your name, your affiliation. Looks like you're calling in from Palmer.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Foster and Josephson and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Kelly McBride, and I'm the Director of Student Support Services for the Goleta City School District. I'm asking for your support of the Special Education Service Agency because it plays a vital role in making sure rural students across Alaska have access to education. Districts like ours have ongoing challenges finding and keeping highly specialized special education professionals. For students with low incidence disabilities, it's not practical or affordable for each district to hire every type of specialist needed. CESA helps us by giving us access to experts that we could not support on our own. In our district, CESA specialists help us serve students from preschool through transition age. They come to Galena in person to observe students, make recommendations, train staff, and offer technical help to our teams and parents online and by phone when they're not there in person. Their support has made a huge difference for a young child moving from the infant learning program, and I believe CESA's services will have a lasting impact on this child and her family in keeping her safe and helping her learn the communication and self-regulation skills she needs to interact with her peers. They also help a student who is about to finish high school and is working on the navigating the social complex situations in high school students experience and getting him ready for life after high school and achieving his goals for employment and independent living. Other specialists work with IDEA homeschool students on sign language, braille, orientation and mobility, and life skills across the state. CESA also lets us borrow materials and technology from their library and offers training for families and staff across the state. I urge you to support House Bill 246 and increase funding for the Special Education Service Agency. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Great. Thank you very much for calling in. Going back up to the top of the list here, I've got Ms. Jean Gerhard Cypress calling in from, I believe, New Mexico. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Yes, thank you very much, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Jean Gerhard Cypress. My husband and I are both retired special educators, having taught in Buckland and Kiana a few years ago. I have served on the Special Education Service Agency, the CESA board, for about 10 years and have been the chair since 2019. I've also served as a member of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education for about 15 years, but perhaps my most important role is as a parent of children with special needs. I currently and have for a long time lived in Kiana above the Arctic Circle, accessible only by air, water, or snow machine. And that reality impacts services available to students with special needs. I'd like to share some information about my daughter, and some of you may have met her, as she has advocated heavily for the restraint and seclusion bill. Beginning in pre-kindergarten, my daughter has significant behavioral challenges, which continue throughout her schooling. We were always asked what was going on at home, but as special educators, we were able to meet her needs at home. In school, she had a classroom and special education teacher, but neither was trained to respond appropriately, and as a result, her behaviors were treated as misconduct, malicious, and something to punish. Starting in pre-K, I was called to the school, to her class on a regular basis. She was sent home on a regular basis. She was also restrained and removed from the classroom on a regular basis. Because of not having the expertise, my daughter was denied an appropriate education, could not get the services she needed. As former teachers in special education, we knew what she needed, but could not get it. My daughter was is very bright, but it's hard if people don't understand to separate that from behaviors. We began working with CESA when my daughter was in elementary school. And the first time we met the specialist, they asked us what we wanted. And nobody had ever asked us before. We were able to say we wanted her educated. And with CESA's support, they were able to work with the school staff to understand her needs and to develop accommodations and plans that could help her be successful. the guidance they provided, the support, not only to the school, but to us as parents, and the follow through helped ensure that services were not just written on paper, but implemented. Without CESA services, we had gone to mediation with the district. Without CESA services, I know that that would have escalated into a court case. This is how CESA helps school districts that cannot find all the specialists they need, and helps the parents, and most importantly, it helps students be successful because they do have the expertise. And when they can come in and work with a school, they are building capacity so that the next student has access to that training through the teacher and the paraprofessional. So I am asking for support for the increase for the CESA bill because our students need it, and it helps everybody in the system. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you. Looks like the next one I had mentioned earlier, Monica Goyette, I believe, is with the Department of Education. And so I'm going to next move over to Elizabeth Joseph. I've got down here Congiganat, but I think it's Congiganok. If you could state your name, affiliation, and just let me know if I got the location correct.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Good morning. My name is Elizabeth Joseph. I'm from Congiganat. It's located southwest of Alaska. The only way you can come to our village is with a 45-minute 2-7 plane ride, 4-hour snow machine ride from Bethel. And another maybe 6 hours by boat. I'm going to speak from my heart. I didn't have anything ready, but I am a mother of 6 children, 4 of which are affected by alcohol. I am a board member as a parent for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, and also for the Special Education Service Agency. I have a child that was getting services from CESA. And if it wasn't for them, I would not be where I am today. I have a 21-year-old son that is full-blown FASD, and he had a lot of behavior problems in school. At one point, he brought a little wooden gun that his dad made him for when they go out hunting. He brought it in his snow pants, snow suit. He brought it to school and he got in trouble for that. That was when CESA had stepped in and helped us. We were asked to send him away because he did not belong in the village. He is my child. I've raised him since he was 11 months old. I adopted him from the Office of Children's Services. If they did not step in, I would not have learned the things I have learned. And also, he would not be successful in completing his education. He has learned to read. He has learned to write. He has learned to He has learned to live outside of a school setting compared to his brother who was not able to get services because he's a borderline behavior problems. I am so appreciative of them for coming out to my village, helping the teachers that we have high rate of overturn of teachers. They have been there from the time he was 6 years old to the time he graduated at 19 years old. I am in support of the increase in funding for CESA. Great. Thank you.
Thank you so very much for calling in. Ms. Joseph, I believe we might have a comment. Representative Jimmy.
Buena, Co-Chair Neil. Buena, Fat Elizabeth Gunner Luton Jackfield Ramda Umk, Guyana Sisamiga Urloji Jelly, Guyana Jacknik Rinagichkina.
Can we hear that in English? Sorry.
Ripson, Jimmy.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I just wanted to thank her for giving a hard testimony and from her heart. And I'm so glad that she got to reach out to CESA for a program and get the help that she needed for her children.
Thank you, Representative Jimmy.
Thank you. That was Representative Allard. And so with that, we'll go on to our last testifier, and that is Sally Dibdahl calling in from Hoonah. If you can state your name and your affiliation.
Good morning to you all. I'm calling from Hoonah. My name is Sally Dibdahl. I'm the grandmother of an autistic 10-year-old boy whose life has been very highly impacted by the wonderful services of CESA and my life as well and the family's life. We are hurt and persistent here in Hoonah, special ed-wise, and our parents are excellent, and but they really need input and guidance, and CESA is able to come this month. So it's April, so I believe in more funding and more specialists because there's all kinds of kids that need a good education all around Alaska. So thanks for listening today.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Dibdahl. Is there anyone else in the room or online who would like to testify? I think we've got everybody. So with that, just a reminder, if folks are watching and they would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by emailing us at house.finance@akleg.gov. So for now, we'll go ahead and close public testimony on House Bill 246. And we do have a fiscal note. We'll get the departments to walk us through that. And that is Ms. Monica Goyette from the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence, the director. If you could put yourself on the record and maybe just state the control code that you have at the bottom right of your fiscal note to make sure we have the correct one, and walk us through that fiscal note, Ms. Goyette.
Good afternoon. My name is Monica Goyette. For the record, I'm the Director of Innovation and Education Excellence. And I am providing information on House Bill 256 on the fiscal note.
Okay, go ahead and walk us through that.
So the fiscal note for House Bill 246 increases the multiplier from $23.13 to $268.89. Statute requires the previous year's data for average daily membership be used to determine the current year's allocation. For example, fiscal year 2026 average daily membership is 124,981.4 students. Multiplied at the new rate of 26.89 students, it would be an increase of $400,069.9.
Okay, and sounds like we probably have the correct control code, but just to verify, the one on your in front of you is that the bottom right control code is HJQJW. Is that correct? Ms. Goyette, are you there?
I apologize. I am looking for that control code for you.
Oh, it's at the bottom right of the paper. It sounds like the number you had is the number that we've got in terms of the dollar amounts, though, and I think that's probably the important part. So with that, I also want to note that we do have online and available for questions Don Enoch, Education Administrator with the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. And so with that, I think we've checked off all the boxes and just want to see if the committee has any questions or comments for Representative Josephson, and then I'll either propose an amendment deadline, or if there are no amendments, then we can entertain other options. So Representative Galvin, question?
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. Representative Josephson, thank you. Mm-hmm. Appreciate this bill. And I did hear in the testimony that there was at least one family who where one of the children who she wished would have services, there were not services for. And so my question is around capacity and need. Do we know if there is a long wait list? And if you have any sense of that history of data, that would be helpful. And or perhaps it would be the department, I'm not sure, but I would like to know how we're doing.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I think the wait list that was discussed in the other committee, education, may have been as low as 7 students. That's my memory.
Mr. Alper, if you could put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ken Alper, staff to Representative Josephson. Yes, through the chair to Representative Galvin, the wait list is relatively small, and it's driven by the internal capacity, the number of caseload limitations of the staff. And they I don't think they had historically had a wait list. They're just sort of first getting into that now. It's relatively no small numbers, and the intent of the bill is to keep that from happening, obviously.
Okay, so thank you. Follow-up.
Follow-up.
So just to clarify then, at the very least, we think we'll be able to offer services to the wait list and maintain current services with inflationary costs. This should take care of it.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's our understanding.
Thank you very much.
Got questions from Representative Hannon and Representative Bynum. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair. And I guess I'm just going to make a statement, which is the only reason I would be interested in an amendment deadline would be to increase the funding for it. But I would rather move the bill today and to see if there were support for increasing the funding. We could do that in a floor amendment. So I would rather move this bill along so it is positioned to complete the process, because I think increasing CSIS-based funding is very critical. And I've, you know, spoke to this previously, as we see more and more turnover in districts, especially with specialists like special ed teachers, the demands for services is going to fall even greater to CESA. And I think it's important to get an increase there if there were support among, say, more conservative members of this committee and a floor amendment were made to increase its funding. I would absolutely support it, but I would rather move it from this committee sooner to do that versus keep it here, because, as you know, we frequently get tumbled and delayed. So I'd like to move the bill as fast as we can and would still advocate for increased funding for CESA for the next fiscal year.
Yeah, I've got Representative Bynum and then Allard. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. In response to the member from Juneau, if there's going to be an appetite for having a different discussion on this dollar number, I'd actually prefer to do it here in this committee. I don't trust the process when we get to the floor to actually make that happen on the floor. I think having it done here is probably going to be more reliable. With that being said, though, I did have a couple follow-up questions. Follow-up from my previous question, the last time this was presented in front of us, and the through the chair to Representative Josephson. Thank you again for bringing this forward. I know this is important work. My understanding that an important part of this increase is to make sure that we are providing wages that are adequate enough to keep these people in place and providing services. Was that my misunderstanding, or was that one of the elements to the need for the increase?
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, that was absolutely part of it, you bet. It's meant to serve as an inflation adjustment.
Perfect, thank you. And as a follow-up to that portion about compensation, when I look in the statute and I under the statute for this, it indicates that the employees here are covered under SBS and PERS. Do we know if they have a supplemental or Social Security as part of their compensation?
Representative Josephson?
I don't, through the chair, Representative Bynum, I don't know that. I think you're right about your earlier statement. So the SBS would be that supplemental. Social Security is probably unlikely, but I don't know. It may be that Mr. Savelle, for example, if he's still with us on the phone, might know that.
We've also got Ms. Monica Goyette and Donald Enoch with the Division of Innovation and Education Excellence. Would they maybe be better? Or do you think Savelle is better?
I think that Savelle would be better, or the other board member, Ms. Gerhard-Cyrus.
Okay. Let's start with Ms. Gerhard-Cyrus. Were you able to hear the answer or the question, Ms. Gerhard-Cyrus? Let's move over to Mr. Richard Saville. Were you able to hear the question? Mr. Saville, are you there? Okay. Ms. Monica Goyette, would you happen to know the answer to that question?
Can you please repeat the question through the chair?
Sure.
This is Monica Goyette for the record.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, the question was really talking about compensation and whether or not employees are participating in Social Security or the supplemental benefit system.
Ms. Goyette?
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, the department does not have information regarding employee benefits per CESA.
Okay. Let's circle back one more time. Ms. Gerhard-Cyrus, are you there? And Mr. Saville, are you there? Okay, I think Representative Josephson, maybe sounds like you might do a little bit of research on that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and actually 1430.620 notes that employees are either in TERS or PERS. If they're in TERS, they're not probably getting that supplemental. If they're in PERS, they would be. I don't know anything beyond that. As to the question or the comment from the member from Juneau, the number was derived from, I think, Mr. Savelle, in a memo last year. And by number, I mean the new multiplier of $26.89. I think the derivation is just straight inflation. In other words, I appreciate the generosity of the committee, but I don't know that they're asking for more than that inflation adjustment.
Okay, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I do know that that typically when we're talking about our school districts in general, that they don't participate in Social Security and or have available to them the supplemental benefit system. However, that does not preclude them from opting into Social Security. because this is a standalone organization. I don't know if they have done that. They may be part of the church system and PERS, but that doesn't mean that they may not be available or be able, I mean, to actually participate. And I just don't know. And so that's what I was trying to find out. And then I did have a follow-up question with regard to a previous question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Previously, when we were having testimony on this item, I asked the question of whether or not the organization had looked into opting into being a scholarship granting organization, as that was a new measure in federal law and a potentially large avenue for raising additional monies for the organization. Was that something that was, as a follow-up, was that something that was looked at or discussed after our previous meeting?
Representative Joseph.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, my apologies. I see here, because I wrote down SGO, Scholarship Granting Organization, that you brought that up, but no, there was no further inquiry or investigation of that.
Thank you very much. That's my questions. And if we could get a follow-up at some point with regard to the benefits, that'd be fantastic. Thank you.
Ms. Gerhard Cyrus, I believe you're back online, and we have a question.
Yes, and I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
Thank you. I apologize for that. I was checking with Olivia, who's our ED, and she says that they, she actually is on now and on hold. They don't, the classified staff gets SBS and PERS. Specialists are enrolled in TRF, if that answers the question.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you for that. That's helpful for the PERS employees. Those that are enrolled in, thank you for the response, but those that are enrolled in the TERS program, are they opted into Social Security at a minimum? And I don't know that.
My understanding.
Ms. Gerhard Cyrus.
Yes. Through the chair, my understanding is no, but Olivia is online now and on hold, and she can better explain that.
Okay.
It's Ms. Yancey for the chair.
Ms. Yancey, okay. I don't see her on yet. However, she just may not be on the my little list here. Is she online? She is. Okay, great. Ms. Yancey, if you could state your name and your affiliation just for the record.
Good morning. This is Olivia Yancey, Executive Director of Special Education Service Agency. Through the chair, questions related to TERS, PERS, and SBS. Specialists are under TERS, and our classified staff or our support staff do receive the PERS and other supplemental SBS, but not Social Security.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Was that I didn't clarify for clarifications. Those that are on the TERS retirement system, you said that they are receiving SBS or they are not?
Ms. Yancey?
Through the chair, there's two different staff. There's classified staff and then there's certified staff. Our specialists are considered certified staff requiring a teacher's license. They do not have the SBS. Our classified staff are not teachers, but they do receive SBS.
Thank you.
Okay. Next question, Representative Allard.
Thank you. Through the co-chair, it's probably for the sponsor of the bill. Representative Josephson, did they request more money sales for the this program? I mean, we have an increase already, but did they? I thought Ms. Yancey said we were good.
Representative Josephson?
I think through the chair, Representative Allard, they did not request more than the adjustment in the daily multiplier or the multiplier to $26.89. $26.89.
Through the
co-chair. Which then gets us to the $469,000.
Okay. Did you have any conversations like this was a good number for them? They were okay with this, or were they trying to not alarm people by only having it increase this much?
Representative Josephson?
Through the chair, Representative Allard, I think this is a good number for them.
Okay. So I would then agree to with Representative Hannon to quickly move this out so that we could get it to the floor. And then if somebody wanted to do something on the floor, that's something I would do. But I'm hearing from the sponsor, the funds are fine, and I would like to get this out too as well.
Okay. Do we have any further questions or comments for the sponsor, Representative Tomaszewski?
Thank you, Co-Chair. So I'm looking at the page 3 of your presentation for the participants across districts. I don't see any Mat-Su or Fairbanks in here, and I'm sure there's others, but it looks like districts served is 49. Is there a reason all districts aren't served? Or
Representative Josephson?
I'm super confident, Mr. Chair, that the best source for answering that is Ms. Yancey, who's now with us, the executive director.
Ms. Yancey.
Hello. Through the chair, I wasn't sure if I missed the direct question, but I believe the question was related to school districts and why we have 49 and not 53.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, I'm just looking at the map here, and I do not see Fairbanks. I do not see Mat-Su. I'm sure there's others, and just curious as to why they're not participating or if there is some other reason that they're not.
Ms. Yancey.
Through the chair, an excellent question. Through Alaska state statutes, we are directed to provide rural and rural remote. And so the LID outreach program primarily serves those school districts. Given the number of students within our more urban school districts, that would be a challenge for us as a team of 13 specialists to provide those services. The exception would be the Alaska Deaf Blind Project, which is listed there with a couple of additions, and they do provide services to Mat-Su and Fairbanks.
Okay, follow up.
Follow up, Representative Tomaszewski.
Yeah, I see Anchorage on the map. I see Juneau on the map, and so that's the reason for the question. Also, I'm wondering, is Mount Edgecombe included in this? I see Sitka on the map with 190 students. Does that include Mount Edgecombe?
Ms. Yancey.
Through the chair, an excellent question. The participant total actually identifies your school team members, and so not student numbers specifically. The individuals that are supported through Anchorage and Juneau are, and I don't have that number, but we do have homeschool correspondence programs, and some of those individuals live in that area that are through Raven Homeschool and IDEA.
Okay, thank you. And just one more follow-up.
Representative Tomaszewski.
I'm looking at Lower Kuskokwim, and that number kind of sticks out as a really large number, 821 in Lower Kuskokwim. Is that just based on the number of the geographical area that probably encompasses a lot of schools in that area, or why is that number so high?
Ms. Yancey.
Through the chair, the Lower Kuskokwim School District is roughly the size of West Virginia with about 27 schools that have, to my knowledge, and may be corrected on that. But as a result, we have a high number of cases across all five programs and teams that are being supported.
Okay, thank you. And one final question.
Representative Tomaszewski.
So the funding for CESA, there's a there's a $50,000, 1.19% funding is interest and other. Can you just explain that a little bit, the interest and other in your funding stream?
Ms. Yancey.
Through the chair, that is interest that we have within our accounts for our fund balance. And so that is typically what we implement in our committed fund balance per the board to keep our quarterly expenses that are reimbursable afloat until we get them reimbursed.
And one follow-up on that fund balance, what is your average fund balance that you're carrying at this time?
Ms. Yancey.
Typically, we have roughly around 4 million. I couldn't give an exact number right now because I don't have the slide in front of me.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we've got Representative Allard and then Stapp. Representative Allard.
No, I'm okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, I think Co-Chair Foster through the chair, and maybe this will be the sponsor worth it just for our online. Just curious on the pro rata nature of the statute, right? So basically it says in law that in the event that you this the amount is insufficient appropriated, the legislature, you guys have to prorate the funds. And I'm curious if you've ever had to deal with prorating in the event that we haven't appropriated enough money for the statute through the chair.
And that was for Representative Josephson?
Or the sponsor, or the testifier.
Okay. Ms. Yancey is absolutely the best source once again.
Okay, Ms. Yancey.
Through the chair, to my knowledge, we have not.
And quick follow-up.
Representative Stout?
Yeah. How would it work in the event that you had to do pro rata through the chair? Because, I mean, you can't really pro rata a portion of an employee. So, like, every time I see something like this in statute, it's generally like a grant-based thing. So, through the chair, if you know.
Ms. Yancey?
Through the chair, I would have to get back with you on exactly what that would look like for CISA since we haven't done that.
Okay. No worries. Thanks.
Okay. I don't see any further questions. Representative Bynum?
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair to Representative Josephs, or Co-Chair Josephson. As part of the this change is to create basically an inflation adjustment since 2021. I'd probably argue that that number is probably a little bit lower in this bill than what's reflected in reality. But with that being said, one of the conversations we've had here on the Finance Committee and on the floor of the House has been talking about increased costs of transportation. I was really kind of wondering what the impact of those, even if temporary, costs are having on the organization, given its widespread reach across the state.
Representative Josephson?
For the third time, it would be best answered by Ms. Yancey.
Ms. Yancey.
Through the chair, an excellent question. We have experienced increased travel costs. Our trips that I've budgeted for each specialist typically run from 17 to 18. And this upcoming year, given our cut from average daily membership, I'm budgeting about 15 trips per year, an incurred specialist with an average cost of $1,868.
Thank you for that. So is your immediate response when we see these escalating costs to just reduce service?
Ms. Yancey.
Through the chair, we will, yes, the increase in travel costs prevents us from providing potential second trips or third trips to sites. And so we then will pivot to distance delivery services.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any further comments or questions. Representative Stout.
Briefities.
Okay, House Finance back on record at 9:55 a.m. Just want to let folks know we also have with us online Representative Moore. And so I think we are at the end of our process with the bill. And I can either set an amendment deadline or entertain a motion. I think Representative Allard, go ahead if you'd like to make a motion.
No, I'll let the co-chair, Shragi, make that motion. I just wanted to let co-chair Josephson thank you for bringing this forward. There's a lot of things that are important in education, and this is one of them. And we heard some compelling words from moms and dads and parents. And so, yeah, I think this is a really great bill, and they need to be funded accordingly. And you know, what I heard was that this is a really good partnership that the state doesn't necessarily have the means to do, and this nonprofit does. So we need to go ahead and move this forward. Thank you, co-chair.
Okay, thank you, Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, co-chair Foster. I think it's the will of the committee that we move this bill. So I would move House Bill 246, Work Order 34-LS1255/alpha from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Check for purpose of discussion.
Okay, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I just wanted to briefly say we, on the record, just a few moments ago said that we would like to see this bill moving forward. We have the motion in front of us that if there's to be any amendments or conversation about amendments, that we would try to take those up on the floor. As we sit here now, I will try to trust that process. And hopefully we can, if there is an amendment, we can bring it forward to the floor and have support for that. So with that, Co-Chair Josephson, or Co-Chair Foster, I will remove my objection.
Okay. Seeing no further objections, House Bill 246, which is Work Order 34-LS1255/A, moves out of House Finance with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. And so with that, Representative Josephson, thank you very much. Do you have any comments?
I don't. I'm very grateful. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. So with that, if folks could stick around to sign the committee report. And in terms of moving forward, our next meeting is scheduled for today at 1:30. And at that meeting, we'll hear House Bill 96. That is the Home Care Employment Standards Advisory Board. We'll be taking public testimony on the bill. And we also have another bill, that's Senate Bill 86. That is the Money Transmission and Virtual Currency Bill. On that, we'll take public testimony as well. So if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we'll be adjourned at 9:58 a.m. Thank you.